The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
And we welcome you back. Final hour has arrived. We're an hour away from the CFP rankings coming out. Not a lot of the expectation of change. The big news of this late afternoon, early evening is the ACC pretty much saying that Clemson and Notre Dame will have next week off. So they play this weekend, head to the ACC championship game with a bye week and an opportunity not to run into any serious COVID issues, or more serious than they've already had. That gives the ACC a reasonably good chance of getting two teams in the playoff if they have a good game and Clemson barely wins. Let's get back to the calls, and Pat is in Georgia. Hey, Pat.
Hey, Paul. I enjoyed listening to Bruce Feldman today. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I've been thinking about Derek Mason and prospects for Vanderbilt. Most universities, if not all except for Vanderbilt, have an athletic department and an intramural department. And they are separate and not equal. I think at some point during the 7 years, when Derek was there, I think Vanderbilt made a decision to, and you probably know, you have a lot of connections to Vanderbilt, I think they folded their athletic department into their intramural department. And I always wondered if, you know, what kind of message that was, and would it make any difference to a coach coming to Vanderbilt for their first head coaching job?
Well, Pat, I thought Vanderbilt did away with the title of athletic director and athletic department and merged it into the general university. And, you know, regardless of the semantics, it didn't send a very good message. And quite frankly, I don't know what Vanderbilt has done in recent memory that has sent a very positive message in relation to we are serious about competing at all levels. Now, we obviously the women's soccer program is successful. The men's baseball program is fantastic. They've won two national championships under Tim Corbin. The basketball program has literally fallen off a cliff, and that used to be the pride and joy of that university. But the lack of facilities, the lack of support, the lack of direction. Remember, they brought in an athletic director who was not qualified. He worked for he was a commissioner of the D-League in the NBA and didn't have a clue what he was doing. There's been a lot of transition and turmoil, and I'm not sure it really matters, you know, who they hire, Pat, as long as they still have the same facilities. What good is it going to do?
Well, you make a good point, and do you think Mike Bobo might end up there?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, I don't want to hurt your feelings. You're a good friend of mine, but I've always been one to say I'd swap Clemson for Vanderbilt any day of the week and twice on Sunday.
Well, you didn't hurt my feelings. I appreciate
okay.
that.
Okay.
It's fairly humorous, though. It was good to laugh. John is up next in Orlando. Hey, John, go right ahead.
Hey, Paul. How you doing, bud?
We're doing great.
I got a question for you. All right, and Tony considered to be a a person who, well, he returns punts. So does that make him a special teams player?
Yes, he is a special teams player and a good one.
Well, another question for you. There's a guy this week who kicked like five punts down inside the 5-yard line. Mm-hmm. Is he a special teams player?
Most certainly is.
So what I don't understand.
Boy, this is hard to figure out where you're going.
At. You know exactly where I'm going.
Sure.
Are you telling me Vanderbilt doesn't have a men's soccer team?
They do not.
They don't?
I believe they folded it a number of years ago.
Let me ask you something. In the NFL, if they can take someone who's like a wide receiver in the NFL, and because there were three quarterbacks who were out with COVID, they can make him a quarterback in an NFL game. Do you think maybe they could have found somebody who kicked off in high school?
I don't know the answer. I mean, John, I'm not playing games with you. I mean, I
know you're not.
I follow your line of thinking. And
you know, if she hadn't run her mouth saying that it was more difficult being in a soccer tournament than it was at that game, if it wasn't for the fact that all the replays show her kicking the ball, they say it's a squib kick, looked like to me she tried to kick it pretty hard, but it doesn't matter. Anyway, walking to the left and off the field, you know, I mean, the Townsend boys at Florida, when they kicked off, they ran down the field, and they were one of the first ones to make a tackle. You know, I'm tired of being fed horse crap and told that it's ice cream. That's it, you know?
That's okay. And I believe, I believe John Toney was the co-special teams player of the week. I will tell you, I've never paid much attention to the awards. I know the SEC gives them out, and if you're a player and you win one, it's a great deal. You're proud. You're proud. Your family's proud. Your teammates proud. But I think this is fairly easy to figure out. I think people are trying to apply advanced calculus to something that is simply not that complicated. My sermon of the day. Let's take a break. We have something really special for you in a minute. We occasionally dabble on the wild side and bring in some of our friends from Nashville, because we have a couple. And one of them is on deck as we continue. More of your phone calls in a few minutes at 855-242-7285. But one of the youngest and hottest stars in the Music City is up next. That man right there is going to—he's going to entertain us, I can assure you that. We are coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we welcome you back. And our next guest is one of the hottest names in Nashville. A new record coming out entitled Southern Symphony. He's had four number one hits, including his latest, Love You Like I Used To. And as I say hello to Russell Dickerson, I wanted to say, man, we're so proud to have you on this show, and privately I want to say it's so lucky for you to be on this program. And then I realize already this week you've done Jimmy Kimmel and Ellen. So please tell me this is the biggest moment of your career. Good afternoon.
It really is. You know, I'm honored to be here. So thank you for taking the time. I humbly, join the Paul Feinbaum Show.
Well, we were talking during the break, I want to hear that, when you're out on, when you're on these other shows, you talk about your affinity for this program and for me. And then I find out your mom reacted to you being on this show. Can you share that with the audience?
Yeah, so they were over for Thanksgiving, and I was just kind of going through the schedule, and she was actually writing it down on a piece of paper, and I was like, we got Ellen, we got Jimmy Kimmel, and she's like, okay, and I was like, and then actually Paul Feinbaum, and she was like, oh, are you serious? I love him, and I was like, well, okay, I love it. I love that I just named off those, and hey, she loves some Paul.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Russell, that's my new career. I'm big with the moms. Hey, listen, congratulations. I mean, four number one hits. I know getting a record, published in Nashville is a big deal for anyone. I know a lot of artists there, but to get to number one, I want to go back a little bit because you're still really young. This is not your last go around. But talk about the. I don't even know if I want to call it a struggle because you're pretty successful at a very early age. But talk about getting that first record out and obviously hitting number one and what that must have been like.
Oh man, it's the most I don't know, it's the most perseverance I've ever had to muster up in my entire life. You know, it's I started touring around 2011, straight out of college. I got my first publishing deal. And so, you know, my publisher, when he signed me, he said, there's more professional athletes than there are professional songwriters. And I was just like, wow, that blew my mind. And so that was just the beginning. And so it was, you know, tour van after brushing our teeth and truck stops, playing for six people in South Dakota, time after time after time, you know what I mean? And it was a long struggle, but you know, as I have these four number ones, you know, each one is just, I just get more gratitude towards how long it took for me. It didn't happen quickly. You know, it happens quick for some people, but the grind and the struggle for me was real and I appreciate it. I love the grind. I will never stop grinding, you know, and I just love that it took long for me because I appreciate every single step of the journey now, even that much more.
You know, we obviously talk primarily sports here, and in talking to great champions, whether coaches or players, the hardest thing is following up success. And you know, there are books of one hit wonders in the record industry. How do you follow that up and realize you don't want to be an asterisk? You don't want to be a trivia question.
Right. That is, that is why I'm so grateful for the time that I got to spend in the woodshed, all those years of not finding success yet. And in that woodshed time, I wrote Yours, Blue Tacoma, Every Little Thing, my first three number ones. I had those all written before I even stepped out into the spotlight. You know what I mean? And so that's why I'm so grateful for how long it took is, you know, I was able to backstock and guarantee hit after hit after hit because I had written, I'd been writing songs for 5 years before I even had a hit. And so those years were super vital into just backstocking and guaranteeing continued success.
Some of this is self-explanatory. When your latest is Love You Like I Used To. I think, you know, even in looking at the video, that's not hard to figure out. But I want to ask you about this because I asked someone who I became friends with many years ago in Alabama. His group had, I think, 40 number one hits. Randy Owen, the lead singer of the group Alabama. I said, when you're writing a song, what are you thinking about? And he told me in a very explicit word that if I used here, I would be a roadie for you on your next tour because I wouldn't have a job. But you know what I'm talking about. Writing a song involves what? Take us through that process.
I mean, I've always envisioned the live show. I've always envisioned an arena slam-packed full of people singing every word of this song. Are they you know, is it catchy? Is the melody great? Is there a moment that they can just like scream out at the top of their lungs? And, you know, that's all kind of elements that I like to throw in to my songs, because I consider myself a performer, and I want to take these songs to, you know, Madison Square Garden. I want to take these songs to the Garden in Boston. You know what I mean? Like, I want to take these songs to the masses. And so that's what I envision when I write songs. But also, coming from a real spot, you know, if I tell my story, I guarantee you there's another person out there that can relate to that story. And my next single, Home Sweet, coming out next, talks about getting back from our honeymoon on endless margaritas and sunshine and the beach and getting back to Nashville, and I got dropped from my publishing deal, my income stopped, and coming from paradise straight back to reality. And so, you know what I mean? It's just like telling my story, and you know, there's somebody out there that's going to be able to relate to it.
Russell, songwriting, especially country songwriting, is all about experiences, as you said. You just went through one that I'm sure will, you know, did and will continue to impact you. You and your wife had a young child a couple of months ago, a son. And tell us what that's been like, and how has it affected I mean, obviously, you're home more than you probably have ever been, but tell the audience the experience of being a father.
Oh, yeah. I mean, biggest blessing in the entire world of being able to be home during my wife's pregnancy. And he was born September 10th. So being able to be home, he's 10 weeks now. And it's just like, you know, I don't know otherwise if we would have had that time. We were supposed to, he was going to be born, and then we're on tour 2 weeks later. And so that was the original plan. But I mean, a lot of people have asked me, like, you know, there's got to be some songs coming out about Little Remington. And, you know, and I'm just like, I've tried, but every time I sit down and grab a guitar, I'm just like, I just start, like, tears come to my eyes. Like, I can't even, like, emotionally get there yet. You know what I mean? Because it's just like, it's a big deal. And it's a lot because, you know, a crazy moment of, I actually lost my grandmother the exact same day that Remington was born, probably 5-6 hours before. And so that day, to go back there in time in my mind, is just like such a bittersweet and heavy emotional feeling that I'm still kind of unpacking that. And but I know there'll be some great songs to come from that very soon.
Russell, let's talk about your latest album, and you know, Every record has a different approach. Every record has a different concept. What was the one that you followed for this one?
Well, Southern Symphony. I picked the name because you know, the Southern Symphony, if you listen to that song, the chorus is all of these different sounds from my childhood. You know, the sound of a magnolia breeze, ice cubes and sweet tea, bug zapper buzzing in the driveway, fight song on a Friday. And so those are just the first few lines of the chorus. And, you know, throughout the song, it names more, but it's all of those sounds from my childhood combined together make a Southern Symphony. And I was raised in West Tennessee and a little town called Union City. And so that, you know, that was such a huge part of my childhood. And I don't know, I feel like that's one of the more deep, you know, dig deeper emotionally songs that I've written. And it was just really special to me. And, you know, a line that this is probably a perfect segue, maybe not, but it's Garth Brooks on a CD and Rocky Top on TV. And so it's just all of these all of these things that I grew up listening to make a Southern Symphony. And so that's, you know, that's why I picked the album title. And Southern Symphony is one of my favorite songs I've ever written.
Well, you you know that the art of interviewing is always to save the best for last, and this is the tough part of the conversation here, because you grew up in Tennessee, you went to Belmont, you got a Tennessee sticker on you right now, so I'm just going to kick my feet up here, because you're the songwriter, you're the entertainer, you're the star. Can you solve the conundrum better known as the University of Tennessee football program?
I wish I could. My manager is also an absolute diehard Vols fan. And, you know, we text every Saturday. you know, throughout the games. And it's just like, it's kind of hands up at this point. It felt so good this season. It started off, you know, it felt so solid. And now here we are with, I can't even say the record. I'm not even going to acknowledge it. But, you know, I'm hoping for this Saturday coming up. Yep, I see it on there, Florida. I'm hoping for a miracle. That's all we can hope for at this point. You know, we got some COVID going around the team, so God knows what we're going to look like. You know, but we just got to keep our hearts set on 1998. Hold on to that hope, and just keep the dream alive. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about Nashville because, I mean, obviously I've run into a lot of people there that have affinities for various schools. There's a couple of pretty well-known Georgia fans and obviously LSU fans and Alabama fans. But it is Nashville, and it is still a UT town, at least it was the last time I was there. What are those football conversations like when you are either on the road during normal times or just, you know, hanging out, recording or writing songs?
I mean, I'll tell you what, in as far as the songwriting community is, you know, are we there? Sorry. We're here?
Yeah, we're still here.
As far as the songwriting community, there are so many Georgia boys that, I mean, that's all the, it's kind of even hard to even have a conversation. You know, they obviously crush it. They've been crushing it the last who knows how long, but it's, you know, it's hard to be a Vols fan in the songwriting room with all these Georgia boys coming up from Georgia and writing songs in Nashville. You know what I mean?
I have spoken to, let's see, who have I talked to? Luke Bryan. There are a couple of other ones there. I mean, who's the most obnoxious Georgia fan among the country music artists?
Probably Jason Aldean, you know what I mean? I love him. He's one of my great friends, but I mean, he loves his Bulldogs, man. I can't say anything, you know, I can't talk trash. I'm hoping for a day that I can talk trash. And, but at this point, I'm going to let him and Luke Bryan and I mean, who Thomas Rhett, Charles Kelly, I'm going to let all of them have their Bulldog heyday, but I will say there's going to be a day that the Volunteers rise and I can talk college football trash again.
I see a number one hit coming out of that day. I don't know if your career can wait long enough, but it's out there. Hey, Russell, thank you for making time. Good luck with the album. Congratulations on your new son. Obviously, it's a son. It's not a new son, but it is so cool to talk to you. And I, as a long suffering Tennessee football fan, I will be first in line to read the number one to buy the number one hit back on Rocky Top.
That's right. Yes. All right. I'm writing it. Rocky Top Part 2 coming at you.
Hey, congratulations. Thanks for coming on. All the best.
Hey, Paul, thank you so much for having me, man. My mom's going to be stoked, as am I.
Hey, Mom. Hey, thanks, Russell. Russell Dickerson joining us. 4 number one hits. His latest Southern Symphony is out this weekend, and we are coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we welcome you back. Great to have everyone here for the final 30 minutes of the program. Bo is up next. Hey, Bo, thanks, and good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Paul.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Just got one comment to make before I get to my main comment is you know, he was probably one of the best basketball players that never played basketball in college.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Who was that?
It was Joe Namath.
I didn't realize that.
I had a cousin who started for the University of Alabama back when Joe Namath was there and Steve Sloan. They could both shoot the basketball really well. Joe Namath could dunk it any way you wanted dunking it before he hurt his knee. And he was a great, great athlete. Now, my main question, my main issue I called about, you said that you couldn't see Coach Saban coaching beyond 78 years old. Of course, Coach Bryant died when he was 69. Coach Saban is a young, I'm 69. Coach Saban is a young 69. And he realized after this last weekend how much he missed being on the field and being part of the team. He will coach as long as he is healthy enough to do it. And with his routine, which you know nothing about probably, he will be there for a long time. And that's just what I wanted to say to negate what you said about 78. 78 is not as old as it used to be. So, do you have any comment to that?
Not really, Bo, because I don't have any idea what's going to happen, and neither do you.
That's right. And what sports did you play in school?
I was a starting quarterback at the University of Tennessee. What sport did you play? Actually, I wasn't. I got hurt. Mitch, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Paul. How are you today?
I couldn't be better.
How was your Thanksgiving?
It was quiet but great.
Blessed. I'm going to use your own statement against you.
Okay, sure.
Yesterday, you made a statement to one of the other callers. They were talking about Ed Orgeron. And you brought up the fact that how he was so braggatory about how this team might actually have a better defense this year than last year's.
Right.
Okay. My question is he a snake oil salesman or is he a bad evaluator of talent?
I don't think he's a snake oil salesman. I think he got intoxicated with success and allowed it to get to him in terms of how he began to sell his current team. He's not the only one who thought LSU was going to be a top 10 team. The pollsters thought it as well.
I think the pollsters were just as much enamored as he was.
I think we all were.
Anybody
yeah.
who loses 14 starters and doesn't really have a established quarterback, they were in for a fall to begin with.
Well, the hardest thing in the world, Mitch, and you know this being a Clemson fan, is consistency. And really, if you look at it, only three programs, I would say, in the last 7 or 8 years have consistently been great. And that's Alabama, Clemson, and Ohio State. Everyone else comes and goes. Notre Dame had a couple of good years, and they fell back. Now they're on a roll again. And that's what makes Saban and Dabo Sweeney so unique, is the ability, no matter what. And that where Ed Orgeron failed. Nick Saban has never lost to the degree that of talent that Orgeron did, and on top of that, losing Chase before the season and a couple of other key players. But Nick Saban has replaced almost entire teams and both
almost
coordinators before.
Staff.
Exactly, and I think that's what got Ed Orgeron more than anything is losing that coaching staff. Because I mean, Orgeron, he's a great recruiter. He's a great motivator. Is he a great coach? I don't know. I know what his resume says, but you know, he may have erred. He may not have, but he may have erred in replacing Dave Aranda, who was the best defensive coordinator along with Brent Venables in the country.
Well, can I add this real quick, and then I'll listen to you. You know, with him having a bad year and now facing potential sanctions, his recruitment ability may not be that good.
Well, I would say, and Scott Rabelais was with us about 3 hours ago, and he raised the question. I didn't even bring it up. We were talking about the future, and he brought up the Title IX investigation, and it sounds like it could be serious. It's going to be serious. Don't misunderstand me. It's a disaster for them. It's just a matter of how high it goes. The athletic director has already gone from that era. The president's gone. Orgeron is the only constant. And I will say, having, you know, in my former life, Mitch, been an investigative reporter, when you're in charge, and he took over during this period from Les Miles, it's hard to escape all the mud, no matter what.
Well, earlier you made a statement that they're going to decide about a future permanent president. I can't see either the basketball or the football program really surviving without being overhauled with the new president.
Well, you know, remember, the new athletic director is from there. He's got incredibly deep ties, and he has said very little about Orgeron. What could you possibly say about Orgeron last year other than the obvious?
Nothing.
So, I have no knowledge of this investigation other than having spoken to the reporter a couple weeks ago, but it's a serious. These are serious allegations. These aren't. These make what Will Wade is accused of minor stuff.
Yes. Yeah. I agree.
I mean, you're talking about criminal activity here.
But the fact that what you just said, you know, last year you couldn't say anything bad about Ed. Now the fact that he's had this bad season, there's going to be people looking to.
Oh, yeah, and he does not help himself, Mitch. He's always talking about, you know, he said today, I don't know if you saw the clip, where, you know, I know how to build championship programs. Well, he built a championship program, but there's a big difference in building one and keeping it at a high level. And this season, I mean, all he needs to do is beat Alabama or beat Florida the last 2 weeks, or Ole Miss. Forget Ole Miss, but... But I mean, he's teetering toward a losing record if he's not careful, and that is not going to look good.
And has that ever happened to a...
Right now, he's on track to have the worst record of a defending national champion since 1943.
Oh, my goodness.
That was a couple of years ago.
Well, as always, it's a pleasure and a joy to talk to you.
Thank you.
I look forward to talking and seeing to you later.
Thank you very much. Yeah, that was... the end of Franklin D. Roosevelt's third term.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.